I didn't dare let go of his arm. My body felt, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that I was sitting on a barren, dome-like mountain, and if I moved an inch to my right, I would fall beyond the tolerance point into an abysm. I was absolutely sure I was sitting on a curved mountainside, because my body moved unconsciously to the right. I thought it did so in order to keep its verticality, so I tried to compensate by leaning to the left against Don Juan as far as I could. Don Juan suddenly moved away from me, and without the support of his body, I fell on the ground. Touching the ground restored my sense of equilibrium. I was lying on a flat area. I began to reconnoiter my immediate surroundings by touch. I recognized dry leaves and twigs. There was a sudden flash of lightning that illuminated the whole area and tremendous thunder. I saw Don Juan standing to my left. I saw huge trees and a cave a few feet behind him. Don Juan told me to get into the hole. I crawled into it and sat down with my back against the rock. I felt Don Juan leaning over to whisper that I had to be totally silent. There were three flashes of lightning, one after the other. In a glance, I saw Don Juan sitting cross-legged to my left. The cave was a concave formation, big enough for two or three persons to sit in. The hole seemed to have been carved at the bottom of a boulder. I felt that it had indeed been wise of me to have crawled into it, because if I had been walking, I would have knocked my head against the rock. The brilliancy of the lightning gave me an idea of how thick the bank of fog was. I noticed the trunks of enormous trees as dark silhouettes against the opaque, light-gray mass of the fog. Don Juan whispered that the fog and the lightning were in cahoots with each other, and I had to keep an exhausting vigil because I was engaged in a battle of power. At that moment, a stupendous flash of lightning rendered the whole scenery phantasmagorical. The fog was like a white filter that frosted the light of the electrical discharge and diffused it uniformly. The fog was like a dense, whitish substance hanging between the tall trees, but right in front of me, at the ground level, the fog was thinning out. I plainly distinguished the features of the terrain. We were in a pine forest. Very tall trees surrounded us. They were so extremely big that I could have sworn we were in the redwoods, if I hadn't previously known our whereabouts. There was a barrage of lightning that lasted several minutes. Each flash made the features I'd already observed more discernible. Right in front of me, I saw a definite trail. There was no vegetation on it. It seemed to end in an area clear of trees. There were so many flashes of lightning that I couldn't keep track of where they were coming from. The scenery, however, had been so profusely illuminated that I felt much more at ease. My fears and uncertainties had vanished as soon as there had been enough light to lift the heavy curtain of darkness. So when there was a long pause between the flashes of lightning, I was no longer disoriented by the blackness around me. Don Juan whispered that I had probably done enough watching, and that I had to focus my attention on the sound of thunder. I realized, to my amazement, that I hadn't paid any attention to thunder at all, in spite of the fact that it had really been tremendous. Don Juan added that I should follow the sound and look in the direction where I thought it came from. There were no longer barrages of lightning and thunder, but only sporadic flashes of intense light and sound. The thunder seemed to always come from my right. The fog was lifting, and I, already being accustomed to the pitch black, could distinguish masses of vegetation. The lightning and thunder continued, and suddenly the whole right side opened up, and I could see the sky. The electrical storm seemed to be moving towards my right. There was another flash of lightning, and I saw a distant mountain to my extreme right. The light illuminated the background, silhouetting the bulky mass of the mountain. I saw trees on top of it, They looked like neat black cutouts, superimposed on the brilliantly white sky. I even saw cumulus clouds over the mountains. The fog had cleared completely around us. There was a steady wind, and I could hear the rustling of leaves in the big trees to my left. The electrical storm was too distant to illuminate the trees, but their dark masses remained discernible. The light of the storm allowed me to establish, however, that there was a range of distant mountains to my right, and that the forest was limited to the left side. It seemed that I was looking down into a dark valley, which I couldn't see at all. The range over which the electrical storm was taking place was on the opposite side of the valley. Then it began to rain. I pressed back against the rock as far as I could. My hat served as a good protection. I was sitting with my knees to my chest, and only my calves and shoes got wet. It rained for a long time. The rain was lukewarm. I felt it on my feet. And then I fell asleep. The noises of birds woke me up. I looked around for Don Juan. He wasn't there. Ordinarily, I would have wondered whether he had left me there alone, but the shock of seeing my surroundings nearly paralyzed me. I stood up. My legs were soaking wet. The brim of my hat was soggy, and there was still some water in it that spilled over me. I wasn't in a cave at all, but under some thick bushes. I experienced a moment of unparalleled confusion. I was standing on a flat piece of land between two small dirt hills covered with bushes. There were no trees to my left and no valley to my right. Right in front of me, where I'd seen the path in the forest, there was a gigantic bush. I refused to believe what I was witnessing. The incongruency of my two versions of reality made me grapple for any kind of explanation. It occurred to me that it was perfectly possible that I had slept so soundly that Don Juan might have carried me on his back to another place without waking me. I examined the spot where I'd been sleeping. The ground there was dry, and so was the ground on the spot next to it, where Don Juan had been. I called him a couple of times, and then had an attack of anxiety and bellowed his name as loud as I could. He came out from behind some bushes. I immediately became aware that he knew what was going on. His smile was so mischievous that I ended up smiling myself. I didn't want to waste any time in playing games with him. I blurted out what was the matter with me. I explained as carefully as possible every detail of my night-long hallucinations. He listened without interrupting. He couldn't, however, keep a serious face and started to laugh a couple of times, but he regained his composure right away. I asked for his comments three or four times. He only shook his head, as if the whole affair was also incomprehensible to him. When I ended my account, he looked at me and said, "You look awful. Maybe you need to go to the bushes." He cackled for a moment, and then added that I should take off my clothes and wring them out so they would dry. The sunlight was brilliant. There were very few clouds. It was a windy, brisk day. Don Juan walked away, telling me that he was going to look for some plants and that I should compose myself and eat something and not call him until I was calm and strong. My clothes were really wet. I sat down in the sun to dry. I felt that the only way for me to relax was to get out my notebook and write. I ate while I worked on my notes. After a couple of hours, I was more relaxed, and I called Don Juan. He answered from a place near the top of the mountain. He told me to gather the gourds and climb up to where he was. When I reached the spot, I found him sitting on a smooth rock. He opened the gourds and served himself some food. He handed me two big pieces of meat. I didn't know where to begin. There were so many things I wanted to ask. He seemed to be aware of my mood and laughed with sheer delight. "How do you feel?" he asked in a facetious tone. I didn't want to say anything. I was still upset. Don Juan urged me to sit down on the flat slab. He said that the stone was a power object, and that I would be renewed after sitting there for a while. "Sit down," he commanded me dryly. He didn't smile. His eyes were piercing. I automatically sat down. He said that I was being careless with power by acting morosely, and that I had to put an end to it, or power would turn against both of us, and we would never leave those desolate hills alive. After a moment's pause, he casually asked, "How's your dreaming?" I explained to him how difficult it had become for me to give myself the command to look at my hands. At first, it had been relatively easy, perhaps because of the newness of the concept. I had had no trouble at all in reminding myself that I had to look at my hands, but the excitation had worn off, and some nights I couldn't do it at all. "You must wear a headband to sleep," he said. "Getting a headband is a tricky maneuver. I can't give you one, because you yourself have to make it from scratch. But you can't make one until you've had a vision of it in dreaming. You see what I mean? The headband has to be made according to the specific vision, and it must have a strip across it that fits tightly on top of the head, or it may very well be like a tight cap. Dreaming is easier when one wears a power object on top of the head. You could wear your hat or put on a cowl like a friar and go to sleep, but those items would only cause intense dreams, not dreaming." He was silent for a moment, and then proceeded to tell me in a fast barrage of words that the vision of the headband didn't have to occur only in dreaming, but could happen in states of wakefulness, and as a result of any far-fetched and totally unrelated event, such as watching the flight of birds, the movement of water, the clouds, and so on. "A hunter of power watches everything," he went on, "and everything tells him some secret." "But how can one be sure that things are telling secrets?" I asked. I thought he may have had a specific formula that allowed him to make correct interpretations. "The only way to be sure is by following all the instructions I've been giving you, starting from the first day you came to see me," he said. "In order to have power, one must live with power." He smiled benevolently. He seemed to have lost his fierceness. He even nudged me lightly on the arm. "Eat your power food," he urged me. I began to chew some dry meat, and at that moment I had the sudden realization that perhaps the dry meat contained a psychotropic substance, hence the hallucinations. For a moment, I felt almost relieved. If he had put something in the meat, my mirages were perfectly understandable. I asked him to tell me if there was anything at all in the power meat. He laughed, but didn't answer me directly. I insisted, assuring him that I wasn't angry or even annoyed, but that I had to know so that I could explain the events of the previous night to my own satisfaction. I urged him, coaxed him, and finally begged him to tell me the truth. "You're quite cracked," he said, shaking his head in a gesture of disbelief. "You have an insidious tendency. You persist in trying to explain everything to your satisfaction. There's nothing in the meat except power. The power wasn't put there by me or by any other man, but by power itself. It's the dry meat of a deer, and that deer was a gift to me, in the same way a certain rabbit was a gift to you not too long ago. Neither you nor I put anything in the rabbit. I didn't ask you to dry the rabbit's meat because that act required more power than you had. However, I did tell you to eat the meat. You didn't eat much of it because of your own stupidity. What happened to you last night was neither a joke nor a prank.